This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hi, this is Mrs. LaGreca, Don's mom. Time for Michael K. Show with Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg. 98.7 ESPN.
Ground ball to Gleyber Torres, and that'll do it. A no-hitter for Corey Kluber on a Wednesday night in Texas. Kluber becomes part of forever.
2-1 to the big city. It's Don LaGreca and Peter Rosenberg hanging out with you on a nice spring day, about 80 degrees, depending on where you are, where you're hanging out today, enjoying the world of sports. I'm Don LaGreca with the great Peter Rosenberg. How are you, Peter?
I'm good. I'm pretty good. I'm questioning whether or not I should go in up and in on Michael on that call.
All right, well, let's start it all off with the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico, the real value in car insurance. Isn't how much you save, it's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. So, okay, Peter, the floor is yours.
Well, listen, Michael's got to do what Michael's got to do. You're a baseball announcer. You have to call a big moment like a big moment. The only thing is, with that being the sixth or seventh no-hitter,
depending on how you look at it. The seven-inning no-hitter by Bumgarner.
Right. Depending how you look at it, six or seven no-hitters in mid-May, is it really part of forever? I mean, yes, officially it is, but man, it does not feel like what a no-hitter used to feel like.
So I'm glad that you said it, because this is the jumping-off point, because this is the tug-of-war I've had with myself pretty much since the final out last night, because I live in the world of the talk show host, right? So anytime I see something in sports, whether it's LeBron's shot last night or obviously the no-hitter, or the Mets losing on a walk-off by Acuna, I start to formulate how I'm going to feel about it the next day on the show. That's kind of just how I've been programmed for the last 25 years. And I thought the same thing you did. Congratulations to Corey Kluber. He's been an amazing story, not just last night, but this year. All right? What did he throw? One inning of baseball last year. Yankees take a flyer on him. He has been just absolutely outstanding. And last night was an achievement. There's no question it's an achievement. He had pitched a no-hitter. It's going to go down in the books as a no-hitter. But there's no question that it's been devalued by the fact that nobody in this sport can hit. This stat blew me away last night. We were on a text chain, Peter and I, with Michael and Ryan Hurley, our program director, Anthony Pusick, our board op, Andrew Gunling, our PD, our producer, of this stat that he threw out, Andrew threw out, that the Mariners, the Rangers, and the Indians have all been no-hit twice. Those are the six no-hitters, if you don't count the Bumgarner no-hitter, which went seven innings because it was part of a doubleheader. That's the first time in the history of baseball there have been three teams to be no-hit multiple times in one season. So the game is broken. The sport is broken. And this is coming from somebody that loves it and wants to see it fixed. So on the one hand, Yankee fans have every reason to celebrate last night because you are a part of forever. It's a no-hitter. We're all programmed to celebrate that. But the record for no-hitters in a season is seven. We have six. And we have just started play on May 20th. May 20th. You don't see there being a problem? Seattle Mariners as a team are hitting 198, Peter, 198. And they're almost a 500 team. So it's got to get fixed. It has to get fixed. And here's what I relate it to, Peter, is that in 05, 06, the NHL came out of their lockout. They canceled an entire season. And what they realized, other than their financial situation, that their sport was broken. Nobody was scoring goals. The sport was boring. So they took the time when they didn't have a year to play. They eliminated the red line for the two-line pass. They put in the trapezoid. They called more clutching and grabbing and interference, opened up the sport, and it worked. And it's helped. Peter, it seems like baseball is going to have a work stoppage next year. It seems like it's inevitable. While they're going through that, if you want to be productive, fix this sport. Now, brighter minds than me have got to come up with the ideas, whether it's the moving the mound back, making the shift illegal. Peter, they got to do something. So on a day where we celebrate Corey Kluber, and I'm not trying to take anything away from the guy, it's still an achievement. But, Peter, no-hitters were something that were big-time stories. They're not stories anymore. I didn't even know about the Trumbull no-hitter from the day before until I read the rundown from Andrew, because it's not special anymore. Used to get alerts. ESPN used to break coverage to go to no-hitters. Like, now it's happening every day. It seems like every single day, Peter, we're through seven and somebody's got a no-hitter. Almost every night.
So what do you think is, to me, seemingly the easiest way to fix it would be to move the mound back. But I wonder what's the most effective measure. Would it be that, or would it be banning the shift, which would then encourage teams to try to hit base hits?
That's the easiest of the fixes.
You think that one more than moving the mound back?
Because
people
moving the mound back to me, Peter, just seems really drastic, right? No, what sport has ever done that? Like I said, all right, see, the NHL didn't acknowledge the two-line pass. That's still a rule. I mean, the red line is still there. It still serves a purpose. When was the last time a sport actually changed the dimensions? I mean, this would be the equivalent of making the nets bigger. This would be the equivalent of raising the basket from more than 10 feet. This would be the equivalent of playing in a 120-yard football field instead of 100 yards. Wouldn't it?
Close.
I mean, you got to come up with some other ideas besides that one. And the shift, I think, would help because now you wouldn't be like, well, my job is to hit over the shift and to hit home runs. Well, if you keep people in a designated area where it's like an illegal defense in the NBA back in the day, where you're allowed to be in a certain area as a shortstop, you can't have everybody on one side, where you can move a little bit, but you just can't have those drastic moves where guys are not playing a position. It would be illegal to not have a third baseman, right? It would be illegal to have three players on either side of the bag of second base, something like that. So that now there are holes, and now when there's a line drive through the pitcher, Peter, we all grew up realizing that was a base hit, not seeing somebody standing behind second base. It's incredible how gifted these analytic people are, where they know exactly where the ball is going to be hit, almost like a science. And the reason that is because nobody makes any adjustments. They hit the way they hit. So now we're going to make you hit the way that you hit, but at least there'll be holes there so they become base hits. So you're not just relying on launch angle hitting over the shift. We'd have Mark Teixeira on all the time, right, Peter? And he'd say, my job was to hit over the shift. So what does that mean? That means hitting a home run. But by hitting a home run, Peter, you're striking out more, less balls in play. Pitchers are now walking batters more often, and you're not getting the excitement of what the game's supposed to be about. And with less balls in play, Peter, that means less of an opportunity for a hit. That means less no-hitters. More no-hitters and less hits, and it's become a problem. I really do honestly believe, and it's coming from a fan, all right? Not a casual observer, a fan. I played this sport. I love this sport. The sport, Peter, is broken, and it's got to get fixed.
Well, the protecting against the shift is the real no-brainer because it's already a concept that exists in sports. I mean, you use the comparison of illegal defense. It's literally the same thing.
Yeah.
It would you could call it illegal defense. It is the same thing. The reason you can't do that in the NBA is because to do so would be unfair. They know that it would mess up the game. So you can't do it. And if you slip into it, you get called for an illegal defense. It's really a no-brainer. I actually don't know why it hasn't happened sooner. Because you and I said it. It is bizarre to see a ball come off the bat that your entire life you know from the second it's hit is a base hit, and it's a ground ball directly to a player standing 10 feet into the outfield. Like, to me, Don, that's just easy. And who's really going to be upset about it? The analytics guys? You can't tell me players are going to be bummed out about that. No, you can't tell me that players enjoy the defense of it so much that they wouldn't trade it so they could hit the ball normally again.
It just doesn't seem the way the game is supposed to be, right? When, before you start changing the 60 feet 6 inches and the 90 feet between the bases, just get back to what you were. Your shortstop was your shortstop. Your third baseman was your third baseman. You played your position. And if a guy hit it where you weren't, then you tip your cap to him. Now, the obvious answer would be stop trying to hit home runs, but you're not going to be able to change that. This is the way they feel like you can win games. So I don't know how you can get into the mind of a baseball general manager or the analytics people and say, stop doing that. You can't do that. So you got to make the adjustments. So what you did was, like in the NHL, these goaltenders are so gifted now. They'd go into the corner, they play the puck and throw it back out of the zone. Well, you know what? We can't stop them being gifted. So what we're going to do is we're going to put them in an area where they're not allowed to go. Right? So that's what you do. And you don't have to upheave the whole thing like saying, well, we need more goals. So what we're going to do is we're going to make the nets bigger. That's too drastic to me. Moving the pitcher back a foot seems too drastic to me, doesn't it? Like, we got to come up with other ideas before we start compromising the thing that has pretty much worked for us for 150 years. 1-800-919-3776. And as far as Michael's call, it was absolutely spot on. Because that's the way you play it. Because it's still a special moment. It's still a part of forever. People aren't going to forget that. It's just that it's happening more often and it's becoming less special, but it's still in the books as a no-hitter. It's still something. And it's a Yankee moment. And also, too, he's calling the damn thing off the monitor. I'm getting a little irritated with a lot of these people that are like overanalyzing what's been happening with announcers lately. I mean, Marv got a lot of abuse for the game, the Celtic game the other day against the Wizards. You know, I'm hearing complaints about that Gary Cohen got something wrong during the Met game. You're calling it off a TV. That's not the way the game is supposed to be. Give these guys a break, will you please? And I know it. Calling these games off a monitor is hard. It's not the way you know it. You're picking up numbers, trying to pick up, you know, camera angles. You're a slave to not being able to look at the whole ice or the whole field. You're guessing on a lot of substitution situations because you're physically not there. I'm not saying you did that, Peter. I'm just saying that, you know, please, let's not critique these announcers when they're 1,000 miles away from where the game is being played, calling it off a monitor in a dark stadium, okay? I thought it was so interesting watching somebody had sent out, I don't know if you saw it, Peter, video of Michael making the call.
And yeah, I saw that.
Crazy that was, right?
Yeah.
He's looking at he's like a foot away from the TV, and it's not like the monitor's like some big 50-inch screen, by the way.
Also, the crazy part to me is seeing the dark stadium behind him.
I know, it's just weird. Hopefully that'll all end. And we'll be able to get back to normal pretty soon. Yankees are underway against the Rangers. Yankees go down 1-2-3 in the top half of the first inning. And again, I don't want to be pigeonholed and, oh, Don, you're pouring cold water on the achievement. I'm not. I'm just stating a fact. I mean, the reason a no-hitter is special is because it doesn't happen very often. But when it happens so much, then it takes the specialness away. It doesn't mean that it's not still an accomplishment. Heck, the fact that you pitch a complete game now is a big deal, right, Peter? I mean, you're itching to get these pitchers out. So the accomplishment's almost the fact that he was able to pitch 9 innings, that he was allowed to pitch 9 innings, that he was allowed to throw over 100 pitches.
Well, that's sort of the part we should celebrate. I mean, there's two pieces. Number one, that just doesn't happen, so you love to see that. And number two, it is the first Yankees no-hitter perfect game since David Cone in 99.
Yeah.
So no matter how you cut it, you're looking at more than 20 years for this franchise. Well,
how about,
so,
I was blown away by this. It's the first no-no on the road since 23. Well, so it's still an accomplishment.
Wait, 1923?
That's
almost 100 years.
I know.
All right, that's all right. You know,
they've
what, Michael,
had a bunch, but
I'd like to rescind my comment. Hell of a call, Michael K. Hell of a call.
But see, that's why you're kind of caught in the middle, because it's still an accomplishment. It's still a part of forever. Everything he said is true. It just, forever's happening a lot now. Okay, so the list is really piling up. And I'm going to have a very interesting top five coming up in about a half hour that is going to be of that ilk. All right? On that theme of things that are not what they used to be.
I know what it's going to be.
What is it going to be?
Top five no-hitters in 2021.
Yeah, right. We've got six to choose from, and I still think Bumgarner's no-hitter should count. It's not his fault the game was only seven innings.
Well said.
1-800-919-3776 is the number to call. Where should we begin? We've got a full bank of calls. People love to talk about stuff like this. Let's go to Steve down in Florida. You're on ESPN New York. How are you, Steve?
Gentlemen, thank you for taking the call. I'm honored to be first on this. I've been just making some notes. So, Don, you can reel me in when I talk too much. First off, it has been mismanaged for 30 years. And I wrote some notes. Steroids, shifts, cheating and no punishment for the World Series and other things. The manager those two managers coming back. The guy at second base after 10 innings. 7-inning doubleheaders. La Russa. The players were juiced 25 years ago, and who knows, some of them may still be juiced. And they juiced the baseballs.
Well, I think they've unjuiced them this year. Steve, it's a great list. It's a litany of things. You're so right. It's been a culmination for years, and it's also baseball's lack of evolving. Peter, the NFL thought there were too many field goals. What did they do? They brought in the K-ball. Remember? Did anybody worry about, oh my God, the integrity of the sport? No, they changed the ball, made it harder to kick field goals. The NFL felt the games were too long. Well, guess what? We're gonna reduce the play clock. We're gonna start after running out of bounds. Once the play is set, we're gonna start the clock back up again, making major changes, evolving. Something you don't like, change it. Like I said, the NHL made their changes 15 years ago. They worked. Now baseball was so against making any changes, and now they're like scrambling and coming up with these unbelievably wacky ideas, like moving the mound back a foot. Putting a runner at second base in the 10th inning, putting a stupid clock between pitches, coming up with rules that are not punishable. Make some changes that actually will affect the sport. Everybody else does.
And here's the thing. I just don't see who the crowd would be who would seriously object to an illegal defense. Who are you fighting against? Because the old school managers aren't going to be against it. The most players won't, I don't think, will care. I think they'd be in support of it.
It's a great point, because usually you hear some sort of counter argument. Well, if you do that, this will happen.
But what is it?
I don't know what that is.
You can still do everything you want to do. You can be as analytic driven as you can be, but within these parameters. And these parameters say you have to stay, you know, from 20 feet right of the second base bag to 15 feet left of the first base bag. That's where the second baseman is, and he could, you know, it's not that hard.
It still rewards range, right? If there's an infielder that's got great range, he'll have an advantage over somebody that doesn't. It just means the balls in play will have some action, some things actually going on. Let's go out, Danny Long Island. You're on ESPN New York. How are you, Danny?
Good afternoon, man. Donnie, on the list of things that aren't like they used to be, the whipped cream inside a Hostess chocolate cupcake is tops in my list of things that are not the same. But keeping it to baseball, you know, we've watched a 30-year evolution of the game, all of which has been against the pitcher. From night games to juiced baseballs to better baseball bats to a strike zone that went from knees to shoulders to a shoebox, everything has adjusted. The hitters have had every advantage. Now, we all see something's going on here. I don't know if it's a trend. I implore baseball not to do anything immediately or rash, because let's remember, this rash of no-hitters and batting average is not due to the pitcher's approach. It's due to the hitter's approach.
Right.
So we don't want to punish the pitchers, because every hitter is trying to hit the ball to the moon. But I do agree that the easiest solution, and one that exists in other sports, is a couple of tweaks to the defense. Like, you can only have four people in the outfield. You have to stand on the infield dirt. You cannot be in the outfield. I don't want to see a guy hit a line drive that has been a single to right for 120 years, be caught by some second baseman who's standing out in no man's land. Like, come on, you kidding me? It's already hard enough to get a hit. Getting a hit is the hardest thing to do in professional sports. So let's not, now listen, if you want to put a thing where you have to have certain people on a certain side of the infield. Well, then you take a baseline-looking line, you draw it at second base, you draw it out about 15 yards, and the shortstop has to start the play on that side. So that wouldn't change the nature of the game as much as, but let's not punish the pitchers. I despise the fact that they're thinking about putting back the mound, where there's so many injuries as it is. People learn 60 feet, 6 inches from 12th grade on or 10th grade on. So let's not punish the pitchers because the hitters are completely taking a different approach.
That's why I don't want to move the mound back, right? I want to reward these guys that in the parameters of the game have become special. But I think making it a legal defense is not that crazy a thought. It really isn't. And I think that would be a huge step in the right direction. You're right. You don't want to overreact. Apparently, and I was going off a stat that I saw last night off of MLB.com, Allie Reynolds threw a no-hitter on the road for the Yankees in 1951. So still a long, long time ago. But it was in 1923. Apparently that stat was wrong. But I'm with Danny. And Peter, I think you're the right way. I don't want to – nobody's asking to make these catastrophic, unbelievable changes. To me, moving the mound is one of those things. But an illegal shift, finding some way to tweak things, to me is not – even close to the end of the world. And you just got to – and you're so right. What would be so wrong with that? Crazy.
It's the move. It's the move that makes sense.
It is easy to do. It's an easy fix. And as you said, it's who's going to complain? Who's going to moan and groan about it? Let's go to Angelo, Staten Island. You're on ESPN New York.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back on. You kind of took the buzz out of while I was calling, but I wanted to defend Michael a little bit. His last night's call when he's saying of who was part of Forever, I don't think, in the way I looked at it, I don't think he was saying he's part of Forever as far as baseball history, because, there's a lot of no-hitters, and they're not as fun anymore, but throwing a no-hitter in the Yankees uniform means so much more. It's like winning World Series with the Yankees and winning World Series with the Dodgers. That means so much more than doing it with another team. He's part of – he goes with names like Gooden, Wells, Cone, Larson, and how many – only 11 pitchers, other pitchers have done it in the Yankees uniform.
Angelo, you're right. It's special. Like, and I said that like when – you know, even Michael would poke fun. Like, why did everybody go so crazy when Santana threw the no-hitter for the Mets? Because the Mets never had a no-hitter. So it was kind of special to the Met fan. So a Yankee fan should celebrate what happened yesterday. Nobody's telling you you shouldn't. And that call was spot on. It just alerts everybody to the fact that there is a problem going on here. James Harden with an interesting tweet. We got to get into that. More on this subject coming up as well. We're going to talk to Mike Woodson, Peter, coming up in a little bit. We'll get his thoughts on the Knicks. The last time the Knicks were this good, he was the head coach of the team, and I know he's been around the team quite a bit, so we're going to get his thoughts on what's happening with the Knicks. LeBron, pretty special moment last night. That was a big game. That was a huge game, and they fell behind early in that one. I think at one point, Peter, what was it, like 52-40, something like that, and they come back, and LeBron hits the big shot in a must kind of win situation. They would have survived the loss, but still would have had to play an extra game. So that's a big win for the Lakers and LeBron.
And I'll tell you what, man, you talk about a successful experiment. That playing game ain't going anywhere because
That is here to stay. And if it works the way I think it's going to work in the NBA, do not be surprised that that's something that isn't used in other sports. It's Don and Peter on the K-Show. Michael will join us as soon as the Yankee game is over, so we'll yes. But right now, exclusively on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K-Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hey, everybody! It's me! I'm back! And guess what? It's another segment.
We're doing the list, Michael. I don't care if you don't like it.
The Daily Don.
I'll fight to the death for this list.
It's the Daily Don Show. He makes lists.
Take it away, Donnie.
All right, it's topical, Peter. And that is the top five sports achievements that have lost their luster.
top five sports achievements that have lost their luster. So the obvious way to start then, Don, would of course be the no-hitter.
Right, and I've got that certainly at number one. That was always a big, big deal. I don't know how you felt, but when I got alerted there was a no-hitter, I scrambled to the TV to watch the end of it. I still do. I just have had to do it a lot more often this year than I've ever had to do it. But it was always a big, big, big deal. And now when you have six in basically a six-week span, you're averaging one a week, not ideal. So I have that at number one. Any other guesses?
Yeah, I have a couple in my mind. I wonder if we'll be on the same page. This one was big for me as a kid, and it feels completely dead. The 1,000-yard rushing season.
Oh, see, we have like a secret simpatico kind of relationship on the air that I think Michael is jealous of. I've got it at number four. And there's a couple of things in play here. First of all, it lost its luster once we went to a 16-game schedule back in 78 because all you had to do was average 60 yards a game and you'd get 1,000. But it started to lose its luster. Now, actually getting 1,000 might be an accomplishment, but nobody seems to care because the running back has kind of been systematically taken out of the conversation. It's throw, throw, throw. So I have 1,000-yard back at number four.
And then with the dominance, you know, with the really dominant backs who've gotten 2,000 or close to it, it's almost like the real number that people start freaking out about is if you can get close to 2,000. I will also throw in the triple-double.
Oh, the triple-double is number two on the list. When I was growing up, and I've told this story when I started working at Sports Phone, we had the NBA hotline, and this is how old school and how old I am. It was a hotline, Peter, that was developed so that radio stations across the country can call in to get sound from NBA games around the NBA, right? And so the stringers from every game would call us with sound, and we'd pay them like $25, you know, a game. And it was mandatory. If somebody had a triple-double in the game that you were covering, you had to get sound from that play. Had to. Now, forget about it. It's a footnote, right? The way that Westbrook and Harden, like Harden crushed every Nets record for triple-doubles in like the first 20 games he played this season. It's ridiculous. Triple-double, number two.
Let's see. I know there has to be an NHL one.
There's not.
There's not one. Tell me the other sport, the sports we have.
I've got football and baseball.
Football and baseball. How about the 40-40 club?
That's not bad. I didn't have it on there. Not bad, but I think it would be something that would be an achievement because that means 40 stolen bases and nobody steals
them. Which doesn't happen anymore. Right.
But it was a big deal at the time. Who are you taking out?
Hold on. Lost another accomplishment that's lost its luster in baseball. 100-win season.
No, I thought about that, but it does happen.
No, and
it's still somewhat meaningful. 100 games.
Right. And you said football also, right?
Yeah.
4,000-yard passing season.
All right, that's number five. Absolutely.
Boom!
It used to be, wow, he threw for 4,000 yards. Now it's like, well, you know, him and 12 other players did it that year. So definitely I've got it at number five. So we got the baseball one left. And I'll give you a hint. It was in one of Andrew's this date in Yankee history recently. And I even commented on how it doesn't seem like it's that big a deal anymore.
What was the day in Yankee history? Is it an offensive stat?
Oh, yeah. Even though offense is down, this one thing is not down, and it happens all the time. And when I was growing up, when it happened, you would like freak out and go, whoa, what an accomplishment. And now you're like, oh, that's a good game.
A good game. So it's an in-game.
And Andrew, this is one that I actually came up with late, so it's not the idea that you had. Andrew had a good one that I didn't put in the top five.
an in-game, I mean, there aren't that many in-game offensive achievements.
I'll tell you what. Mickey Mantle did it.
Oh, homering from both sides of the plate.
That was always a big – wow. He homered from both sides of the plate. Now it happens and, you know, okay, that's good. That's cool.
Because I was going to say, it's not hitting for the cycle. That's still there.
No, it's hitting for the cycle, triple plays. Those are all still big deals, right? But homering from both sides of the plate, it's a nice game. But I remember when I was growing up, if you did that, it was like, wow, it hadn't happened since Mickey Mantle. Or, wow, because switch hitters, back in the day, they had a weaker side, stronger side. Maybe they'd hit home runs right-handed, but left-handed, they were more of a Punch and Judy hitter. Now forget it. If you're hitting from both sides of the plate. So that's
Which, by the
fun.
Way, it's underrated as one of the craziest athletic things of all time, that you can even comfortably swing a bat with both hands.
I know.
We talk about it like it's normal. If you're not a professional baseball player or an incredibly high-level baseball player, Don, what does your swing look like the other way?
I can do it, but I look like somebody that is swinging a bat for the first time. Like, I think I have the hand-eye coordination to make contact, but you'll look at it and go, that didn't look right.
Make contact on what?
Like playing wiffle ball.
Okay.
I don't know if I could do it with a wooden bat.
Like, if you got in a cage and the cage was set at 65 miles an hour,
no.
Are you making contact with left?
Probably
I'm
not.
I'm not. I'd have
to try
to
beach bash. Let's try that. I want to see if I can do it. Now, the one that – so let me recap. 4,000-yard passer in the NFL was number 5. 100-yard back, number 4.
1,000-yard back.
1,000-yard back, number 4. Number 3, hitting from both sides – hitting a home run both sides of the plate. Triple double is 2, and no hitter is 1. The one that Andrew came up with, it was actually pretty good, is throwing 100 miles per hour. Who are you taking out? Because there was a time where, like, when Doc Gooden threw 100, Nolan Ryan, you're like, whoa. Now guys throw 100 miles per hour sliders. Like, you don't even blink when you see 100 miles per hour on the gun. So I thought about that one, but I left it out.
Our listener Jay Ruick on Twitter has a good one, honestly. He said, what about the 50-yard field goal? A 50-yard field goal used to be something. Now it's almost expected you hit it from 50. Not quite, but you see it all the time.
Yeah, it's not something that you kind of stand up and go, wow, this would be something.
No. It's not surprising at all. In fact, with a good kicker, you expect to hit it from 50.
That's why history... I think Norwood missing the field goal in Super Bowl 25 was a tough thing. It was a 47-yard field goal, right? It was tough at the time. Now, like, that did not age well for him. like there are people that are introduced to football over the last 20 years that weren't alive or too young to remember Super Bowl 25. They're like, wow, he missed a 47-yard field goal? How awful. Why was he even in the league? But at the time, on grass, that was the feeling as a Giant fan, Peter, that there was a reasonable chance that he was going to miss that field goal. It wasn't crazy. I really thought it was like 50-50. But now, in the snow, you wouldn't think it was 50-50.
See, I'll disagree with you to some extent.
Okay.
I believe that the feeling in my mind of a miss is a possibility, the line of delineation for me is 45.
Kickers are barely even people.
It's not that I think you shouldn't make it, but I still, because of our upbringing, Don, when I see it's an important spot in a game and my kicker's lining up from 48, 49 yards, I'm nervous as opposed to 38 or 39 yards.
Well, you're nervous most of the time, so they're lining up for a 30-yard field goal. Your heart's in your throat.
Well, and remember our field goal contest. I learned firsthand just how hard it is to make
field
goals.
Yes, you didn't do a good job at all.
No.
But, 45-yard field goals, those are chip shots now.
Which is crazy. That's far.
No, that was good. I enjoyed that list. Hopefully.
And let's be honest, Don, let's just lift the curtain up here. You're surprised I did that well with this list.
Well.
Come on.
Because I threw it out to Andrew. And I wouldn't say he struggled, but he was really deliberate with his guesses. And I was thinking, well, if I do it to Peter, I don't want a bunch of I'm not sure. But you,
Andrew, are you surprised that I did that well?
You did really good. I am a little bit surprised.
Wow, you really just don't respect me as a man.
No,
well, let's
really.
Just be honest.
There's really no other way to take that.
I will fight you after this show.
Honestly, there's really no other way.
Well, it's such an abstract thing. Like Peter guessing right out of the gate, you know, 1,000-yard rusher in the NFL. That was a great guess right out of the gate. It was impressive.
It's just one. It's one that I always think about, because when you see the stats and you see that a guy's at 900 yards, you know, seven games into the year, no one's talking about 1,000-yard rusher. And I remember that club used to be a big deal. They had football cards to say 1,000-yard rusher club. Like, it was a thing to be a 1,000-yard rusher. It's just not even mentioned anymore. It means something to me. Like, when I'm rooting for a running back on Washington, I get excited for them to go over 1,000 yards. But by and large, it's never mentioned.
Yeah, it's not a thing anymore, and that's why, clearly, it's on the list. 1-800-919-3776, taking your phone calls. Mike Woodson will join us at 4:45. We got ENN at 6. Michael will join us at some point when the Yankee game is over. That game's scoreless in the top of the fourth. It's Don and Peter on the K Show on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Ground ball to Gleyber Torres, and that'll do it. A no-hitter for Corey Kluber on a Wednesday night in Texas. Kluber becomes part of forever.
Listen, Michael's got to do what Michael's got to do. The only thing is, with that being the sixth or seventh no-hitter in mid-May, is it really part of forever? I mean, yes, officially it is, but man, it does not feel like what a no-hitter used to feel like.
So I'm glad that you said it. Congratulations to Corey Kluber. He's been an amazing story, not just last night, but this year, all right? But there's no question that it's been devalued by the fact that nobody in this sport can hit. The game is broken. The sport is broken.
The Michael K. Show.
And shoved it right in Carlin's face.
On 98.7 ESPN.
304 in the big city. Don and Peter here on the K Show and the Michael K Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Again, Friday, that's tomorrow, is Big Ticket Friday, 3 o'clock hour.
Oh, yeah.
Jet tickets to the home opener against the Patriots. 4 o'clock hour, we'll have the grand prize winner for the season tickets. And in the 5 o'clock hour, tickets to Game 1 at the Garden, Hawks and the Knicks. And also tomorrow, DCR between 5 and 8 in the morning will be giving away net tickets.
That's a lot, Don.
This is your destination station for tickets and for playoff basketball and playoff hockey, because we got the Islanders on our air. This is the place to be, and I'll have Islander coverage beginning at 6:30 tonight. All right, baseball's on the table for sure. Yankees right now top of the fourth inning. They've got Gardner at third, two outs, scoreless game in Texas against the Rangers. Hawks and the Knicks coming up, game one. And the feeling seems to be that this is a really good matchup. Not just the fact that the Knicks won the three games, but like, I think it's a good matchup, Peter. I think this is the team you wanted to play. I think it's a team that you can beat. And I really think a Knicks fan may be a little bit apprehensive just because of the fact it's been so long. But, Peter, I think this is the perfect matchup for them. And I think Atlanta will be heard from. I think it will go six, possibly seven games. But I really think you'd probably be a little disappointed here if they don't beat the Hawks. And with the way they've played, how they've played in big games, how they've played in close games, how they played down the stretch of the season. And I know they're having the same conversation in Atlanta right now, that they would rather play the Knicks than the Heat, than the Bucks, than the Nets and all that. But from a matchup standpoint, Peter, I think this favors the Knicks to where I think you could really expect them to win.
It's a tough game. It's a tough series in the sense that both teams, you're right, feel that way. And if you're a Knicks fan, this was the matchup you wanted. You did, as much as people said, we want the Nets, not right away you didn't. And there's every reason to believe that you can beat this team. On the flip side of that coin, though, the Hawks are still a more talented team than the Knicks. And they are sitting there thinking they're happy they got the Knicks. So I totally have the expectation that the Knicks will compete. I probably will pick them, but that's a little bit because I want them to win. Let me say this. I wouldn't take this series for granted if you're a Knicks fan at all. You know, if you think that they're on a different level than the Hawks, you're out of your mind.
But they're a team that it's not about one guy. As great as Randall has been this year, he's the team's MVP by far. It's not a team that's driven by him solely. I mean, they really do things as a team. So, yeah, the Atlanta might be – I think Trae Young's probably the best player on the court, right? Maybe not overall from a talent standpoint. Would he be the best player on the court when he's on?
Yes, he's the most desirable. Well, right. I mean, up until this year, he would certainly be the most desirable player between both squads.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's arguable between him and Randall, but when you look at the history, I think you probably go with Young, and maybe there's a little bit more talent, but this has been such a team game for the Knicks and how ferocious they've played on defense. Now, the schedule's out. Game one will be on Sunday at 7 o'clock on TNT, and, of course, right here on 98.7 ESPN New York. Game two will be 3 days later on the 26th, also on TNT. That game will be at 7:30. Then, 2 days later in Atlanta, May 28th, 7 o'clock on ESPN. And then 2 days after that, a 1 o'clock game on that Sunday, May 30th, Peter, on ABC. And the rest of the schedule is TBD, 5 through 7. So,
I mean, there are young fans who like are barely even familiar seeing the Knicks on national TV.
No, you're right. Now, it's not prime time, but you know it's a 1 o'clock game on ABC on a Sunday. That's a really good game for game four.
Even seeing the playoff games just on cable and not watching them on MSG. Like, for some fans, you know, if you're a 17-year-old right now, you were a little kid the last time you were thinking about Knicks playoff games. Mm-hmm.
They'll get a game five will be June 2nd. Game 6 will be June 4th. Game 7 will be June 6th. But the times and where they can be seen are the TBD. But we do have the dates on it. So they'll get the 3 days off between Game 1 and Game 2. And they'll get the 3 days off between Games 4 and 5. But not one of those crazy obnoxious where you're sitting around. It takes 3 weeks to finish up a series. So that's the way it kind of shakes down. For the Knicks, because it's real now. All right, we spent so much time speculating. Okay, who are they going to play? Who do you want to play? And now it's for real, and it's got the same feel I had when they played the Celtics back in 2013. I felt that they were going to win the series, and they ended up pushing the Pacers to 6. It looks like you'll get the Sixers in round 2 if you beat Atlanta. But Peter's right. They're probably having a talk show right now in Atlanta saying this is the matchup they wanted. Now, is it the matchup they wanted because they think it favors them, or were the Knicks the lesser of the evils, right, of the teams that they could have played down the stretch? Because I don't know if they could feel like they've got that favorable a matchup, but compared to the Heat who went to the finals last year, compared to having to play the Nets or the Bucks, the Knicks were probably the team that you'd rather play. But can a Hawk fan sit there and go, oh, this is exactly who I wanted because I think we match up perfect with them? I don't know if they could say that the way a Knicks fan can.
No, this is just the fact that nobody wants to play the top three seeds in the East. This is a very top-heavy conference. I mean, the top three teams in this conference are all viable championship contenders, especially considering we don't really know what the West is anymore because it's not the Lakers conference. You're talking about the Jazz and the Suns and teams that you typically don't have as the best team in the conference. So you feel that any of the top three teams in the East can win the whole thing. So I think if you're any of these teams, you really just didn't want to see the Bucks, the Sixers, or the Nets.
Yeah, and that's it, right? Because I don't know if anybody's saying anything out West, because the overwhelming favorite are the Lakers, who almost lost their first play-in game last night.
And the Lakers are not the best team out West. I mean, it'll be interesting.
But why
to
are
see...
they such the overwhelming favorite? Just because of LeBron?
I think it's a combination of, well, and Anthony Davis. It's a combination of those two guys and the fact that they're the Lakers. But with the Schroeder injury, they've dealt with a lot of things over this year beyond just LeBron and AD, who both may be, you know, somewhat ginger during this playoff run. Now, I suppose there are people who think they're playing possum to some extent, and they treated the regular season kind of like the Nets did, taking the time off when they needed it, maybe taking a little more than they even needed because they all started this season so quickly after the bubble. And now I think people believe, and certainly Vegas probably believes, and the people who bet believe, the Lakers will start being the Lakers right now, and they are the favorite even at the 7 seed. But guess what? Don, we're going to get the answer to that immediately because they're playing the Suns. So we're going to find out in short order if the Lakers are the Lakers everyone expects or if they're actually just a 7 seed. We'll know that next week.
It's so amazing, though, the pressure that was on LeBron last night, and yet, you know, he takes the shot literally and figuratively, right, before he hits the game-winning shot. He said after the game that he just aimed at the middle rim because he saw three of them. Maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but the point is that he felt way more pressure than Curry, right? Because the Golden State, they are what they are, right? And I think that he could still be the MVP of the league, but the Lakers are just built to make a championship run. The Warriors weren't. You know, and we'll see what the Warriors do as far as getting out of the play-in. You know, they'll play again, and we'll see what they can do as far as trying to get into the playoffs now. But there was way more pressure on LeBron, and then they fall behind, and then he hits the shot. So he's incredible.
Well,
remember last year their pressure was on him after they lost that first game to the Blazers. And they ended up winning the series, and we thought there was a legitimate chance that they were going to go out. So he keeps answering the call, man, 35 and all. I guess that's what they're leaning on. Then when push comes to shove, is anybody really actually going to beat this team?
Yeah, I mean, triple-double, a ridiculous 35-foot-3 or 32-foot-3 with time running out on the shot clock, at the buzzer of the shot clock, under a minute left in the game. LeBron's LeBron. It's going to be amazing and interesting to see if he starts taking a turn downhill at some point. Because, Don, I don't know if we've ever seen a player who has stayed at this level for this long.
Yeah.
He's still arguably the best player in basketball right now.
Jordan took the break, but you already saw signs by the time he was 35, right? Now, here's where it could break down. Now, like last year was different, all right? Last year they did make the run, but they didn't have to travel, right? Because they were there in Orlando the whole time. But now to make a run through the West, all the travel you're going to have to do now. I'm wondering if this could be the year. With all the heavy lifting he had to do now with the extra games with the play-in being not 100%, could we see it this year? Vegas doesn't think so, but having to go through Phoenix and then having to eventually go through Utah or whoever ends up being the conference final appearance and then have to face the Nets or the Bucks or the Sixers. Can he do that banged up, 35 years old? Maybe what you're asking, Peter, is going to happen this year, that we'll see it this year.
And speaking of how Vegas sees it, the Lakers opened up as a minus 300 favorite at Caesars William Hill to beat the Suns in their series. The Suns, the 2 seed, are plus 240.
Right.
It's the first time in the last 30 years that a 7 seed is favored to beat a 2. An 8 has never been favored to beat a 1. So that's what Vegas and bettors still think about LeBron James and the Lakers.
And if they lost last night, right? But then won the next play-in game and then were the 8 seed. Would they be the favorites over Utah?
I believe so. Yeah. But maybe not quite as high, but close.
But they'd be a favorite. And you said there's never been an 8 favorite against the 1. There would be this time.
There would have been. Yep.
God, I listen, I'm not going to sit here like I'm some kind of expert on Utah basketball.
Sure you are.
But my God, have you ever seen a 1 seed more disrespected than them?
I mean, honestly, have you ever seen a conference more disrespected? It's a pretty stacked conference through and through. And no one talks about, I mean, listen, this is not the best of the West where everyone is awesome on top. But Utah, Phoenix, Denver, the Clippers, you know, it took Dallas a while to get going, but and Portland. but both Dallas and Portland are incredibly talented. And yet everyone still talks about the Lakers.
Yeah. Well, they won't be able to talk about him forever. Eventually, LeBron James is going to be too old. But right now, the question is...
And that's when he'll be on the Knicks.
I've always felt that he would close it out with the Knicks at some point, but we'll see.
And the Warriors will host the Grizzlies tomorrow at 9 o'clock.
Right. And if they had lost, if he doesn't hit that shot, they lose in overtime, Peter, then, or they don't come back from all the multitude of points they were down during the course of the game, then they're playing tonight, and they might end up being the 8 seed. And be the favorite against Utah. Crazy. Let's go to Rob in Lenox, Massachusetts. You're on ESPN New York. What's up, Rob?
Hey, guys. Hey, Peter. Hey, Don. How are you?
Good, man.
Couple things I wanted to discuss. But first of all, I just wanted to say congratulations to Corey Kluber. I mean, it was a good game last night. He pitched a complete game. I want to know who ruined basketball and baseball, guys. I want to know who had this plethora of three-point nonsense, okay? The other day, I'm watching the Knicks play the Celtics, right? And the Knicks were up by 15. Why do guys continue to launch threes when they're up by 15 points? I understand the weapon of the three as a comeback tool, but the idea of shooting threes all the time when you're up by 16, 17 points, this makes no sense to me. It makes as much sense as Tyler Wade playing right field for the Yankees today when Aaron Judge is the most hottest team, the hottest guy in all of baseball.
Well, it's a day game after a night game. He would have melted.
Oh, my goodness gracious. And thank God he's not playing on turf today, Don. I mean, you know, I'm 56, Don. You know, I grew up in New York. I was born in the Bronx. My whole life I went to Yankee games. But what I want to say first about the Knicks, you know, I love the defense. I love the hustle. But the thing is that to me is like, when are they going to start to play Derek Rose and not bring him off the bench? Because I think he's a better option than Peyton. And that's just my feeling. Also, Emmanuel Quickley, I think he's a very important player in this series coming off the bench, too, to give you instant offense. But, you know, I just can't stand the way the game is played anymore. There's no passing, Don. The beauty of basketball is like hockey. It's motion. It's movement. There's no passing. I mean, that's why I can't stand guys like Kyrie Irving who go up the court, dribble and dribble and dribble and take a shot and don't even look for anybody. I don't understand what is happening in this game. To me, it's like, you know, Red Holtzman is turning over his grave.
Well,
I mean,
you know what it is, Rob?
Yeah, yeah,
you know, we have this conversation every day with baseball, but it's happening in every sport.
Yeah.
And here's the analogy that I'll give. And thank you for the phone call. And Andrew will appreciate this. Remember the Seinfeld when George was smart and Elaine was dumb? Do you remember that one?
Of course.
And the big scene in that one where, like, George, because he's so smart, is hitting home runs at Yankee Stadium with Derek Jeter and Bernie Williams watching, right? Because he knew the geometry that he figured out how to hit home runs. Like, it's that way in sports, that we've been around sports for so long, and a society that has so much access to information, that there are a group of people that have figured out the secret sauce to winning, the cheat code to winning in sports. And that is the analytics of baseball, where it's about the home run. And in basketball, it's about the three. And that's how they figured it out. So they don't know how to do it any other way. Like in baseball, they don't know how to not hit a home run. So no matter what the score is, no matter what the situation is, no matter what the count is, this is how they know how to do it. They don't know how to do it any other way. Same in basketball. You hit threes. Well, you're up by 30 or you're down by 30. What does it matter? Well, this is all I know. This is the only way that I can do it. I think that's what it's really come down to in sports, is that they have figured it out, or at least they think they've figured it out. And because they don't care about entertainment, they only care about winning, then you see that the sport isn't the same anymore. Now, we at least, Peter, can get a younger generation of fans who can say, I like basketball the way it is now. I don't like it the way Rob and Lennox liked it. I like the threes. I like the high-scoring games. But I don't think you get a younger generation saying, I like the way baseball is now. So
no.
I think baseball's killing itself. I don't think the NBA's killing itself. I think the older generation of fans are a little frustrated, but I think by them being this analytic, mostly threes, offense, no defense, the 15 to 25-year-old out there salivating over that. And that's the difference between the two sports. Both analytically driven, both have changed dramatically, but one, I think, is feeding into a younger generation and the other one is repelling it away.
And also, I mean, to respond to the caller's point, it's just, it's not like that up and down the board. I mean, there are guys like, you know, Steph and Clay, for example, when Clay is playing, who both shoot from three nonstop and also are constantly cutting without the ball and getting layups too. Like, there are, this is not a completely league-wide constant problem.
No,
there
but are it will players, be soon. I mean, it will be. You know, but it's still, it's at least a star-driven sport. You never have to worry about in the NBA, oh, our only star is LeBron James and he's out on the left coast. Their games are quicker. They can play more games on national television. They can really expose their stars more than other sports can. So that's not a problem for basketball either. Now, hey, Yankee fans, did you know the New York Yankees are now on Amazon Prime Video? That's right. If you're a Prime member, you get 21 live games this season. So tune in to Prime Video Friday to watch the Yankees take on the White Sox at 7 p.m. That should be a good one. Not an Amazon Prime member? Well, don't worry. Sign up for a 30-day free trial, and you'll get the game this season. A new era begins, and a new way to watch is here. The New York Yankees on Prime Video, only available in the New York metro area. Restrictions apply. More of your calls at 1-800-919-3776. Baseball on the table, basketball on the table. It's Don and Peter taking up until 6:30. Then it's Islanders hockey. I'll have a special pregame leading into the faceoff at 7 right here on 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. A lot of stuff going on. The Yankees just finished their 10-game road trip with a 2-0 victory over the Texas Rangers. They scored two runs in the seventh inning on a couple of pinch-hit singles, one by Urshela and one by Aaron Judge. A great pitching by Domingo Germán and shutout bullpen work by Chad Green and then Aroldis Chapman. And that's a good road trip, guys, when they're 7-3 on a 10-game trip. You play 700 baseball, you're playing good baseball, and the Yankees are now 6 games over .500, which is their high water mark for the year. And they come home and they start a series, which I'm looking forward to tomorrow, Yankees against the White Sox. Now, I've been told that you guys were disparaging of the no-hitter yesterday. So I do want to defend it just a little bit, if I could.
Please.
All right, so this year there have been 6 no-hitters, 7 if you count Bumgarner's, which I choose to do. Major League Baseball doesn't. So let's go with 6. And the Major League record for most no-hitters in a season, I believe, is 7, and that's going to be shattered. But let's say there's 10 no-hitters this year. There are 2,430 games in a season. The no-hitter yesterday from Corey Kluber was only the 311th no-hitter in baseball history. It's not an easy thing to do. Even in an era when nobody hits, you know how many ways there are to get base hits? And to avoid giving up a hit for 9 innings, I think is an accomplishment. I don't think it should be diminished. Now, if you want to make the argument that it's more diminished than it's been, I can sign off on that. But to completely poo-poo it
No. And
say that it's not a big deal, I mean, Jeff Perlman, who's a brilliant writer, wrote the Lakers book. You know, he was tweeting out, I don't understand why people call no-hitters historic. And then he named one of the 311 no-hitters that was pitched by somebody that you never heard of. Well, is this historic? Well, history doesn't have to be big. History is history. Oh. It's something that happened in the past. So I believe it's still an accomplishment and something that you can really look at if you're a player and say, wow, that was a big deal that I was part of a no-hitter.
Well, there's no question. And I think Peter and I said that. So I don't know who was it that said we disparaged it.
Well, I heard that Peter disparaged my call that I said part of forever.
He can defend himself if he wants. And that was the jumping off point. And I defended you because it is part of forever. It is an accomplishment. But both things can be true. It's an accomplishment, but it's an example on how this sport is broken. And it needs to get fixed. Because, as you said, 7 no-hitters is the record. It's May 20th, and we've had 6. And the 6 have all been no-hit by 3 teams, 2 by the Texas Rangers, 2 Seattle, and 2 Cleveland. That's the first time that's ever happened in the history of baseball, that 3 teams have been no-hit multiple times in the same year. So, and there's been countless times, Michael, where there have been no-hitters through 6, through 7, where alerts were given and the no-hitters are broken up. So both can be true. What Kluber accomplished was amazing. He's the first no-hitter for the Yankees since 1999, the first on the road since 1951. And he's been a tremendous story, and it's a tremendous accomplishment. But it has been kind of watered down by the number of times it's happened. I mean, you had no-hitters back-to-back days. And I do count the Bumgarner one as well. So if we do that, then they've tied the record and are going to shatter it. So we have to ask why that's the case, and I think there's major issues with the sport. So we use that as a jumping-off point, but never in a million years should anybody take away from what happened last night. It is an accomplishment, but it's not the same as it was because it's happening way too often now.
Well, I mean, you guys watch the game, and you say that has to be fixed, right? That was your main point, and I think that what we've all wanted, right? The one thing that we hate about the game is the strikeouts and the constant launch angle swings for home runs. Well, that's set up perfectly for people to have low hit games. And the fact that the ball, as far as we know, was deadened just a smidge.
Right.
There are long fly balls that might have been home runs in the last couple of years. Now they're at the warning track. So here's what's perfect about what's happening. Maybe the Nudniks that use the slide rules and the computers will now figure out this is not the way to go because there's not enough hitting in the game. If the balls aren't flying over the wall, this is not the right approach. The right approach maybe is how DJ LeMahieu hits. Maybe people will change hitters from being launch angle swings where they swing and miss or hit long fly balls. This is the perfect tonic. Let the game correct itself. Because the only way that the nerds were going to change was if their way doesn't work anymore. And if the pitching continues this way, the lack of hitting continues, you know what? The brainiacs are going to come out with a different way. That's the way to fix the game.
And that's what I want to see before we start moving the mound, right? I mean, we talked about different ways to fix it. I think you can come up with an illegal defense if you wanted to get rid of the shift. I think that would be a big help. But I don't want to see any catastrophic changes, Michael, to the sport. You know, I would call the strike zone the way it was originally meant to be, from the letters to the knees. There's little tweaks that you can make, but when you hear Major League Baseball like legitimately suggesting moving the mound back by a foot, tells me they don't think that what you're suggesting is easily happening.
Now,
that they're
Jeff
willing
Passan,
to make that kind of a fundamental change to the sport, something that has existed for 150 years, because they see the problem as well.
So Jeff Passan, our good friend, was on with KJZ this morning. And he said that hitters are helping out on the no-hitters. Here's Jeff.
When I see the act of a pitcher carving through a lineup top to bottom, that will not lose its specialness for me, no matter how frequently it happens, because I find pitching to be the most fascinating thing in sports, where you are standing up there by yourself, and one by one, meticulously, you need to work through that lineup. The stress, the strain,
sure,
the execution, everything it takes is really hard. But admittedly, hitters are helping right now. And hitters are helping because of a consequence that's been a decade plus in the making. This all goes back, guys, to pitchers really figuring out how to, I'm not going to say perfect themselves, but pitchers figuring out how to evolve faster than hitters.
Well, you know what happened? pitchers now know that with these guys, with the launch angle swings, let me think, they want a ball low in the zone that they could jack out. So, yeah, let me throw high fastballs. Now the hitters have to adjust, or you know what? They'll continue to strike out and not get hits. Now, here's Clayton Kershaw, one of the best pitchers ever, and he said too many no-hitters are no good.
It's not good, I'll tell you that. I think whatever the intention was with the new ball or whatever it may be, it really hasn't done anything. There might be less home runs, which I guess they want, but I don't know the stats on all that. But I do know the strikeouts are the same, and I think I saw some stats for April that it was the worst hitting month in the history of something. So no hitters are cool, and I have all the respect in the world for Corey Kluber and Bum and all those guys that have thrown no hitters. But to have one happen every night, it seems like is probably not good for the game. You know, fans want to see some hits, and I get that, and some action, and not many people striking out. So I appreciate the attempt that MLB has tried to do, but I think seems like they missed the mark so far. We'll see. I don't know.
Well, that's interesting, and it's also highly hyperbolic. A no-hitter every night. I mean, are you kidding me? It's not a no-hitter every night. I mean, in the last two nights, within 24 hours, yes, there's been two no-hitters. I get it. But there's not a no-hitter every night. If there was a no-hitter every night, there'd be a problem.
No.
I was on with Barton Hahn today. And Chris Carlin was filling in, and he said, well, is this bad for baseball? No. On a national radio show, you're spending 2 hours talking about the no-hitter. Is it good or bad? That's good for a game that you're talking about. Baseball needs to be concentrated on. They need the spotlight on them.
I know, but you don't want the spotlight to end up at the end of the day being, like, diminishing, which was an accomplishment. I mean, you don't want to have bad publicity is good publicity, you know, that whole bag. Like, you know, Corey Kluber accomplished something really cool last night, and instead of talking about that, it's talking about it being overdone. Yeah, it was an exaggeration by Kershaw, but you know what? Every night there seems to be a no-hitter alert.
Yep.
You know, where through six, through seven, there's been no-hitters that have been broken up, you know, six, 7 outs away from a no-hitter. Those used to be special moments too. Michael, we talked about it yesterday during the show. I completely missed the Turnbull no-hitter. I didn't find out until the next day.
Right.
That shouldn't be. And the reason it's happening is because it's losing a little bit of its luster. Yeah, so baseball's being talked about today, but is it being talked about because a major accomplishment happened, or, like, what's wrong with the sport? So that's not the way, Peter, you want publicity, is it?
And listen, Michael, I walked back my sort of half-serious statement about you overstating the no-hitter. You have to call it the way it is, and it is a big deal, especially for this team that hasn't done it in forever and not on the road in a century. So it's a big deal. But there's also no denying that this is not as exciting as it once was. I mean, you know, you see the amount of excitement that existed around the Golden State-LA play-in game yesterday. This is not a league that knows how to do things to make their league more exciting.
But it's interesting. Too much of anything is not good. So people didn't like it when there was too much scoring and too many home runs. So they tried to walk that back. And now, you know, maybe they overcorrected. You know, the game could correct itself, too. And if you want to know about offense, right, the Yankees today, that's their seventh shutout of the season. The last time they had seven shutouts in their first 44 games, you know what it was? 1967. So now, look at the no-hitter whichever way you want. I think that the Kluber story is an amazing story. This guy was pretty much given up for dead as a viable pitcher, broke his arm in Cleveland, pitched one inning last year in Texas, hurt his shoulder, and then he pitched for a lot of teams in a tryout, and a lot of teams wanted him, including the Red Sox and the Rays. And the Yankees, I thought, wow, that's a lot of money to give a guy who's really got a show, $11 million for 1 year, and now Don, I think you'd agree, he's probably their second-best pitcher after Gerrit Cole, and then you've got Domingo Germán, and all of a sudden, the Yankee rotation, which was a weakness, it's not so much a weakness anymore.
No, well, that's true, and I even brought it up. I mean, just the fact that this guy has done what he's done this year has just been incredible. But I'm kind of with you, Michael, in the sense that I don't want to see it diminished. I don't want to talk about this, but that's unfortunately the conversation, because why is it that we're one away from the record, and we're not even through May yet? My top five was sports accomplishments that have been diminished over the years, like the triple-double.
I saw that.
Like, the triple-double's not a big deal anymore. Maybe a triple-double 20, 30 years ago, that'd be the leading sports center. Now it's like it happens every day. But that's increasing offense. It's increasing interest in the sport.
which makes it good for the NBA. Football. The other thing on the list, the two football ones on the list were 4,000-yard passers. Well, that's a good thing because there's even more yards being passed for. And 1,000-yard rushers in the NFL because we're getting away from running the football and we're passing. Like, so all those things have increased offense, increased interest. Those are examples on how those sports are actually better off. I don't know if baseball's better off by having more no-hitters. Well, I think it accentuates the problem with the sport, and that's why it's something that needs to be corrected. That's why this is coming up today, not to diminish what Kluber did. It might be the best no-hitter we've seen of the six because, you know, of the way he did it, where it was, he didn't go out and strike out, you know, 20 guys or whatever. But it just it points to a lack of offense, a lack of interest, and these are things that just, I think, need to be corrected.
Baseball has to reconcile one thing, that they want to speed up pace of game, and they feel that the way to speed up pace of game is to cut down scoring because the more runs you score, the longer the game goes. And I've never thought that length of game was a problem, but you can score runs, a lot of runs, and still have a nice pace of game, even if the game's 3.5 hours. So they've got to reconcile that, too, and not overcorrect. Now, unlike Peter, who's a viper and goes against people that he works with, I'd like to hand out kudos because 10 days ago, we were all talking about this 10-day road trip and what the Yankees were going to be, and Peter said 7-3, and I said 7-3, so I want to congratulate Peter for being right.
There you go.
But hold on.
Both right.
Yeah, you, Don, be clear here. He congratulated me for being right because it also means he's right.
Yeah.
Well, I can't not include the fact that I was right.
But we'll never know if I had been right and you had been wrong whether you would have given me credit.
Yeah, right. We'll never know. You're right. But I know that you had the nerve to actually criticize Mike. How should I have called it? No-hitter for Corey Kluber. Okay. We'll be back right after this. Clown head.
Hey, I had your back, Michael.
I mean, really. I mean, even some people on Twitter, I mean, that's the brainwave that Peter's on, you know, Cheeto dust people on Twitter. But what are you getting so excited about? Well, really, how would you call that, you bunch of losers? How would you call a no-hitter?
Hold on. Wait. Hold on a second. Before you start including me in the Cheeto dust crowd.
You are that crowd.
I was trying to start the show with a provocative thought. I walked it back. I thought it was a great... Let's hear it again. Anthony, you have the call? Let's hear it.
Ground ball to Gleyber Torres. And that'll do it. A no-hitter for Corey Kluber. On a Wednesday night in Texas, Kluber becomes part of forever.
Yeah, is that real crowd noise?
Yeah, that's real crowd. There was 26,000 people there.
Wow.
It's Texas, Peter.
Yeah, I forgot. The COVID never happened. Wow. No, I think it was a great call.
You can't. So the people that listened at 2 o'clock and then turned the show off, they think that you didn't like the call. I won't forget this.
The people who turned the show off deserve whatever they get.
I'm going to pan your album. I've ordered it. I'm going to pan it.
Wow, you know what? I got to tell you, that's not even an equal, that's not a fair comparison.
Really? This is my life, that's your life, and
you ripped
my life.
But my criticism of your call cannot affect you. Although, neither can
your
views
could. It could.
You know what? You like the Partridge Family. You can pan my album. You are going to hate my album. You won't like it at all.
I've got one other thing to say. All right. And I kind of sent it out in a tweet. I'm sure Don saw it. But I want to articulate. So, when I got home last night, I looked through my feed on Twitter to see what people were saying during the game. And I'm shocked at the density of people. I mean, there were people that were actually bordering on threatening me if I mentioned that it was a no-hitter. So get close to your speaker right now because we're not even on TV, we're just radio. Get close. Don't waste your breath anymore. I don't care what you say. I have a job to do. Vince Scully said that you should always mention it's a no-hitter. It's part of your game. I am not a lucky charm or a talisman. I cannot control what's on the field, specifically 2,500 miles away. And if I could, I am grossly underpaid. So please stop with the silliness. I've called 6 no-hitters in my career, and in every single one, I mentioned throughout that there was a no-hitter going on. I have no control over that. So don't waste your precious lactic acid by moving your fingers to type in, you better not mention a no-hitter. I will do it every single time. And what I might start doing, starting tomorrow, is in the first inning after the first out, I'll say he's pitching a no-hitter just to get it out of the way. I have never in my life seen people that are like almost fixated on voodoo as if I have that kind of power to stop a no-hitter. And I will tell you this, there are some announcers that don't say it. They're hacks, every single one of them, that they're playing to a Twitter mob, and they're afraid to get criticized because they might jinx a no-hitter. Hacks, hacks. If you don't say that there's a no-hitter going on, you're a hack.
Completely agree. I'm surprised this is still a thing.
Oh, my goodness, it's a thing.
People are really mad.
You better not mention that there's, in the fifth inning, I'm looking back. You better not mention there's a no-hitter. You better not jinx this. Take a walk.
So they can tweet about that there's a no-hitter, but you can't say it.
No, they did it in their own. You better not say what's going on. You better not jinx it. God.
Think about that.
Wow. It's a lot of Cheeto dust piled up there.
How does that make any sense from a promotional standpoint, right? Like baseball, you could put a bug up if you wanted to do that says there's a no-hitter going on. But if you're like, but for the most part, don't you want like people that are flipping around? There's a lot of things going on. You've got NBA, NHL playoffs. There's other baseball games going on. The Mets had a really good, compelling game against the Braves. People are flipping around. I'm flipping around. Andrew's flipping around. So I go on to the Yankee game, and you could tell me that there's a no-hitter, which would get me to then stay on the game, but you're not supposed to say anything and have me leave thinking it's just some ordinary, Yankee game where they've got a lead. Well, how does that make any sense?
It doesn't. It's ridiculous. And the fact that people really, 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 really believe it, and they really expect me not – we don't have a line score up on the screen all the time. So, as Don said, you're flipping around, and I say, oh, he's seven outs from a no-hitter. You might stick around. And they don't want John Sterling to mention it. If you're on the radio and there's definitely no line score, how would you have him not mention it? And then there's people that do these verbal gymnastics, right? Even Mel Allen, the longtime, always voice of the Yankees, would say, well, there are four hits in this game. All of them are by the Yankees. Really? Now, in the old days, maybe it was a thing. When Vin Scully says that's not what you do, you know what? That's not what you do. So stop it. Stop threatening. I don't care. I will always say there's a no-hitter. And if you don't like me, come get me. If I jinx a no-hitter, come find me.
And also, all that is doing is taking the fact that the players don't talk about it in the dugout. The guys that might actually affect the outcome by making a play, and obviously the pitcher making a pitch or the catcher, whatever he's got to do to call the game, right? They actually affect the no-hitter. That's the thing, not talking about the no-hitter. Actually, it's really not talking to the pitcher who's throwing the no-hitter. And then it became not talking about the no-hitter. Now it's become fans not talking about it when it's happening. Now it's become announcers not bringing it up. No. The whole thing was not talking to the pitcher doing a no-hitter. That's the thing. Everything else is made up.
That's also trash because in 1998, when David Wells was pitching a perfect game and nobody wanted to sit next to him, plopped his butt right next to him, David Cohn, who said, hey, maybe you should break out a knuckleball. He spoke to him. Huh. And you know what? Wells got the perfect game anyway.
But, Michael, I'm not saying that that's right either, but at least I can understand because it could have an effect on the person that's actually throwing the baseball.
Right.
But you sitting in your house in Queens or Michael sitting at Yankee Stadium calling a game from 2,500 miles away is not having any effect on the outcome of the game. What, do you believe in the supernatural?
They do. They obviously
well,
do.
Then,
I have an effect.
How do you have a conversation? That's not a normal person. If you believe in the voodoo and mysticism and the juju of things, then I don't know what to tell you.
Hey, I've got big news here.
Yes.
Listen up, Knicks fans. Sunday on MSG Network, it's game one of the Knicks-Hawks playoff series. So you join the great Hall of Famer, the two Hall of Famers, Mike Breen and Walt Clyde Frazier, when Julius Randle and the Knicks host the Hawks. You could watch it live Sunday, pregame at 6:30, tip-off at 7 on the MSG Network, or you could stream it on MSG Go. And download the free-to-play MSG Network's Pick'em app for a chance to win a progressive jackpot. Now you say, well, what's the big announcement? Well, here it is. Wait. But if you'd like to be there live, you'll need to be fully vaccinated, and you have to listen to the Michael K. Show tomorrow because we're going to have a chance to win playoff tickets in the 5 p.m. hour. It's all brought to you by 98.7 ESPN, your home for Knicks playoff basketball. So we're giving away Knick tickets tomorrow. We're giving away Jet season tickets tomorrow.
It's a lot.
And we're giving away Jet season tickets in just a moment. So let's towel off, because that was an intense segment where I've now gained an enmity toward Peter that I didn't think I'd be able to have.
It wasn't serious. How dare you?
Thank you.
Oh, so you go on the air and you don't... Don and I never, ever do anything just for radio. We only have real opinions.
It led the show, Peter.
You know what? Fine.
It was the first thing that was said.
You know what? I stand by it. Worst call I've ever heard. You should resign.
We should play it back for Michael so he can hear the tone.
Yeah,
the
let's do that. I'd like to hear that. So while Anthony finds it, I do want to tell you, Richard Deitch of The Athletic reporting, Lakers-Warriors last night drew a 5.6 million viewers on ESPN.
Wow.
Yeah, I think the play-in tournament's thing.
Yeah, write that down. Mark it down.
Forever.
All right, we'll take a quick timeout. Take your phone calls as well. Giving away Jet tickets when we get back. Nick tickets tomorrow for the playoffs. Big. This is huge. Kay LaGreca-Rosenberg and you on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Touchdown! The Jets have won it in overtime!
Tell them, Bobby. Jet fans, the 2021 schedule is out and tickets are on sale now. Catch all the action live at MetLife Stadium this season when the Jets host the Buccaneers, the Bengals, the Eagles, the Jaguars, the Saints, and more. So be the first caller right now, 1-888-987-ESPN, and you're going to win a pair of tickets to the Jets home opener against the Patriots. Winners will also be qualified to win season tickets this Friday when we randomly select the grand prize winner. It's all brought to you by 98.7 ESPN and the New York Jets. Single game tickets for every Jets home game at MetLife Stadium are on sale now. So lock in your seats by visiting nyjets.com/tickets and get back to live football this season. Now, I'm excited about this, okay? Tomorrow on the station.
Go ahead.
It's Big Ticket Friday. On DCR, you know the great vehicle we have on from 5 to 8 in the morning?
Oh, sure.
In the 6 o'clock hour, they're giving away tickets to the Jets home opener. 7 o'clock hour, tickets to game one of Knicks Hawks. Then on TMKS, that's this show, 2 o'clock hour. You ready for this? Tickets to Nets Celtics game one.
Wow.
3 o'clock hour, tickets to the Jets home opener. 4 o'clock hour.
No, that has to be it. It's over.
No. Revealing the grand prize winner for Jet season tickets. And 5 o'clock hour, tickets to game one of Knicks and Hawks. Now, the seats that we're giving away for the Knick game, right? They are in the vaccinated section. And 90% of the seats in MSG now are for folks that are fully vaccinated. So if you want to win these tickets, you got to know that this is in the vaccinated section. If you're not vaccinated, they will not allow you in if you win these tickets. And that's, I heard that they might have something like 15,000 there in game one.
Yep.
Because they want the building to be as full as possible, and they are going to allow in people that are vaccinated. So before we get to the phone calls, if you don't mind, here is Peter opening the show.
Listen, Michael's got to do what Michael's got to do. You're a baseball announcer. You have to call a big moment like a big moment. The only thing is, with that being the sixth or seventh no-hitter,
depending on if
how
you
look
the,
at it.
The seven-inning no-hitter by Bumgarner.
Right. Depending how you look at it, six or seven no-hitters in mid-May. Is it really part of forever? I mean, yes, officially it is, but man, it does not feel like what a no-hitter used to feel like.
I will never feel the same about Peter Rosenberg again.
Really?
See, I thought
you know what he did? You know what he did, Don? He went after my bread and butter. That's what he did.
Well,
Don, say what you were actually going to say.
I thought after listening to it, Michael, you would have a different opinion.
No.
Because all he was doing was being a provocative talk show host that wasn't letting relationships get in the way of making the ultimate point, which was, is it really history? He wasn't about the quality of the play-by-play, and he said you had no choice but to do it, but I think the point was, is it really history? And it's a legitimate question. You have to do what you have to do, So I thought you'd be a little easier.
Well, no. Yeah, well, let me be Captain Literal Man, if you don't mind. The Yankees won 2-0 today, right?
Yeah.
That's part of history. It's just different levels of history. Everything that ever happened in the past is history.
All right. Well, this is a tough argument now.
Yeah. Well, take a walk. Let's go to the phones.
Go ahead.
Veronica in the Bronx. Ronnie, what's up?
Veronica.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
How are you? Great show. I'm doing great. Thank you. Great show. I listen all the time. And I have to admit, I started listening because I saw the billboards and I saw Peter Rosenberg on it. And I was like, let me give this a try. So thank you very much.
Because of Peter?
I know you hate to hear that. Yes, I'm sorry, Michael, because I'm a huge Mets fan. And, you know, I always considered you a Yankee boy. I don't anymore.
There you go.
After listening to you. So, but I appreciate all three of you equally. But I do want to disagree with Don as far as diminishing the no-hitters. I think it's still extremely exciting. I mean, I understand that there's been six already, but that itself is an amazing feat. Like, you know, that's not easy to come by. And Kershaw saying that fans want to see hits. Yes, they definitely do, but they also want to witness history. And watching a no-hitter is history.
But if it keeps happening, if there ends up being 20 of them this year, well, then you'll get desensitized to it. Remember, there was a time home runs were great. We loved home runs. Now, after seeing them, basically the only way to get offense now for the better part of a decade, guess what? The home run isn't special anymore. That's all we're saying, is that if it happens a lot, then it ceases to be amazing. And it's not to that point yet. But Michael said, we're probably going to crush it. If we get 20 no-hitters this year, well, then when the record was 7, then how special does it continue to be?
I think maybe for the season it's special because it's still something like, wow, this has never happened before. You know?
Well, that's just the way to look at it. It's like there was a time where the triple-double, right, Michael? That was a big deal. Now it's like, all right, and he had a triple-double. And you don't want it ever to get to that point. And why is it happening, right? When it happens that often, Veronica, then you have to ask yourself the question, why is it happening so often? And is the pitching great? Because that's what was so special. When you went out there and threw a no-hitter, it's so hard to do. But when there are teams getting 2-3 hits a night and you have teams batting under 200, well, then
Agreed. It's
not as hard as it used to be, which then ceases it to be special. And I don't want it to be. I don't want to have this conversation, Michael. I want to go on the air and talk about a Yankee throwing a no-hitter.
Congratulations to Andre Cuevas from Paterson, New Jersey.
Yeah.
He won tickets to the Jets home opener and is in the running for season tickets, which will be given away tomorrow. Yeah, we're excited. Big ticket Friday on the best radio station in the world. In the world. I said it. 1-800-919-3776. More of your phone calls. Peter Rosenberg's vehicle, ENN.
That's
coming
right
up at 6 o'clock. It's Kay LaGreca, that guy, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Now, let's get right to the phone calls. Let's go to Frank in Red Bank. Frank.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Hope you're all doing well today.
Same to you.
Gentlemen, Michael, particular, I want to talk about this no-hitter because I was watching the game just prior to the show today. This is today, Wednesday. I just finished watching your broadcast on your tuned into the Michael Kay Show. And that is when I found out that Corey Kluber pitched a no-hitter. And I've been a Yankee fan for 40 years. I've heard all the other no-hitter calls. I often tune in when I hear about no-hitters from other teams, or at least follow it on, you know, ESPN app on my phone. And last night, I didn't watch the game. I was more tuned into the basketball game for some family stuff. Woke up this morning. I read the Times and I read the Post, looked at the Post, saw nothing about this no-hitter until I tuned into your show this afternoon.
There's some issues here. So you're obviously not on social media.
I am, but I had not turned it. You know, I didn't scroll Instagram.
Okay,
I
was so you, but you're not stuff. You don't consume news on a computer because you got an addition to the post before the game was over.
Well, no, I'm talking about this morning. I usually put the post on as soon as I wake up.
No, I understand, but do you get the post delivered to your doorstep?
No, I don't. It's all digital.
Well, then, please, that's ridiculous. You have a digital post, and they didn't have the no-hitter. So you went 24 hours, and you're a Yankee fan, you say, and you watched the game today. Well, that's not true because we were talking about it constantly on the game today. So I don't know what this phone call's about. Well, what was that about? What was he trying to say?
I think he was trying to say that it was
his
no
head's
big
in
deal
the sand or somewhere else. How could you have not known about it? It was every alert on social media. And if you're watching the basketball game, I know that's a lie because on the bottom line, it said Corey Kluber. When I got home, Corey Kluber pitches a no-hitter. So what's he trying to do with that phone call? That's nonsensical. Let's go to Anthony in Union. Anthony.
Hi, Michael. All I got to say is last night, I think you did great on the call. You got to call it like that. That last call is as stupid as Peter's freaking open. Terrible. Terrible. You're calling the game for the Yankees fan. That's like saying, oh, they won the 28th World Series. Great job, Yankees. Good night. Good to talk to you. Peter, you're a moron.
Well, but here's wow. the thing. Please keep him there. Please keep him there. Here's the thing, sir. What I was pointing out, even though it wasn't nearly as deep as you're making it, is that because of what's happened this year, it's not like the World Series. It had happened
the night before.
It's still
for the Yankees fans. It's not for everyone else. It's for the fans. It's for the guys watching it.
But
he's
it's not the World Series.
It's
not the World Series, genius. You're yelling loud. You're calling names. It had happened the night before.
Oh, my God. I'm talking to the guy that gets excited over a wrestling call. Oh, the Undertaker won his 150th championship. Wonderful moves. Come on.
No, that's a great
I love you. When people bring up wrestling. It's so smart of you. It's so smart. How do you guys come up with mocking wrestling? No one ever does that. Here's the difference between me and you. My love of wrestling makes me earn more money in a year than you've earned in your life.
Now that's a terrible place to go. Don's done this before and he regretted it.
Oh, you know what? I immediately feel a regret. And I'd like to apologize for what just happened.
Just because you're fortunate, you
no won no not fortunate
lottery.
I worked harder to get to the WWE than he had to work to become to not be a virgin anymore. We don't even know if that's true, but I will tell you, I worked for a decade straight to get there, and now instead of being a yo-yo who calls radio shows to talk about a sport that I have nothing to do with. I got myself in the sport. So you want to make fun of me because I'm passionate about it? Listen, he compared it to the World Series. It wasn't the World Series. But by the way, Michael, your call was great. In one sense, he's right. It's for the fan. You delivered it for the fan. But for him to pretend that it was anything like a World Series win, because I have news for you. If the Yankees lose 2 of 3 this weekend, they're going to all be crying and moaning on Monday, and they will not remember that no-hitter. Don, am I wrong?
No, that's a whole nother story, right? The second this team starts to lose again, it'll wear off. But I don't know why you got to go the whole wrestling. That's always the way to delegitimize Peter.
And now make me a bad guy because I threw a haymaker back. You threw the haymaker first, pal. Sorry. You're going to catch these hands.
You did the same thing. It wasn't a haymaker. You did the same thing you did to win the 24-7.
Oh, yeah. Down low.
It's not right. We don't know why people don't make money or make money.
We don't even
know. Awful.
Michael, hold on. Why are you taking this
seriously? I'm embarrassed to be on the air with you today.
Hold on. Why are you taking this seriously? That guy could be a multimillionaire. It was made up. I don't know what he does. I just know he's a loser. He could maybe buy me and sell me. What do I know? But why are you attacking what I'm passionate about to prove your point that the no-hitter was so meaningful? I'm not the one making up this story. And by the way, everyone can pounce on me because I said what I said about Michael's call half in jest. Don's opening take was, and he won't back off of it, baseball is broken. So please, don't make me the punching bag.
I want baseball to be good, but if you pretend that this no-hitter is as meaningful as when we were growing up, you're lying to yourself. So celebrate all you want because you're sad that your Yankees haven't won since 2009. Isn't it so hard being a Yankees fan? All the way since 2009, Andrew got his first championship from his football team 3 years ago. An entire lifetime of rooting. Give me a break.
I've got to ask you a question because I disagree with you that it's not as important as other no-hitters. Bob Gibson, pretty great pitcher, right? Danny McLain had a year that we all still talk about, 31 wins. No one could hit in 1968. Didn't take away from their accomplishments.
No, but
they're
also...
We still look at them as having unbelievable years, and then they had to change the mound.
But think about that, right? That the year of the pitcher, 1968, didn't have this many no-hitters.
But still, they had ERAs of 1.17.
But you even said it yourself. It still led to them moving the mound.
I get it, but we don't diminish what Bob Gibson did or Denny McLain did.
No.
That's my point. So don't diminish what Kluber did.
No, but again, I am not diminishing. But I'm just defending. I'm just saying that it does show you that there's an issue here. I think both can be true.
But you know what can't be true? That my call wasn't brilliant. That can't be true.
Yeah, that's what it's all. Isn't that what it all comes down to?
No, I'll never forget what you did.
By the way, we played the audio. It honestly, when I heard it back, Don, I practically complimented him. It wasn't even anything. It's worse that you went into an interview 2 days ago and talked about your show with an eye. All I did was say that no hitters aren't that big a deal right now. I said you did the right thing.
So what did you want me to swing around the royal we? Is that what you wanted me to do?
It wouldn't have been the royal we. It would have been the actual we.
Rich Belonis. You know what?
Rich, I'm going
to
take off.
What?
I think I'm going to take off ENN.
Good. To the pleasure of many, including the guy you just insulted in his economic standing.
You are such a bad guy.
Rich Velotis on Twitter said, Michael, I have a diehard Yankee fan friend who didn't know about the no-hitter until late at night. Well, that might be the case, but you can't what time is it now? 6 o'clock the next day, and he didn't know about the no-hitter until he turned on the show? I can't buy that, unless you're living under a rock.
No, obviously people are exaggerating to make a point. There may have been people that felt like it didn't have that same feel that it would have a bunch of years ago. Michael, my phone would have been blowing up. I mean, I was alerted to it, honestly, but obviously I was following it with all the other things that were going on because I've got the baseball app that tells me everything that's going on. But like Anthony text, like something like, wow, or this is amazing, and there was a reaction from several people like, what are you talking about? If that had happened 20 years ago, the phones would be blowing up because we were having a Yankees about to pitch a no-hitter. But it wasn't on top of everybody's minds because they've been kind of desensitized to it a little bit. So that's all that's being said. But what he accomplished is still amazing.
No, not to Peter. Anyway,
I didn't
when
say
we get
that.
Back, we'll see how that. Amazing Peter's ENN is. I can't wait. I'm going to critique it.
Just remember this moment, Don. It's number 1,312. Of when a bad guy calls up and blatantly goes after me, and rather than Michael jump in and say something in my defense, he piles on me afterwards and makes me more of a bad guy.
Anthony, please play some music because I want to say something somewhat serious. You know, I do that a lot. And a lot of time, I do it for effect, to get a laugh. This time, I did it because I was in lockstep with everything he said. He made more than salient points. He nailed every single point, including the moron one.
Don, we're learning a lot here today.
Actually, what we're doing is we're confirming a lot.
I mean. God, can you imagine? Can you guys imagine how athletes have to feel when they hear us talk? I gave Michael the lightest criticism on earth, and he's basically been in a tailspin ever since. We spend 4.5 hours a day critiquing what these guys do, and then we don't understand why they get sensitive and don't want to talk to the media. Look how Michael's reacting to a half criticism.
I totally understand why they hate the media. Totally. I totally get it. I've never doubted that. I would hate them too.
Apparently so. You do. You do hate the media.
Because it's been in print. I have thin skin. It's almost translucent. So when one of my guys, I mean, I don't mind when clueless Joe Jacksons who write columns and critique things, I don't care what they have to say. But you're my friend. You open the show that way, I'll never forget it. We'll be back.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.